This is Taking Action Today with Michael Alder, Episode 11, I'm Getting Bigger Pockets. Man, I am excited today. I get to hang out with the Vice President of Growth at Bigger Pockets, co-host of the world's number one real estate podcast, active entrepreneur, and enemy of the status quo, Brandon Turner.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, Brandon? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
So there's a million questions I could ask you here and just tear up your whole night with everything, but let's get right into this. Will you share with me how you came to start Bigger Pockets?
Sure. Well, I can clarify a little bit. I actually came on a little bit later after it was started. So the thing was started originally by Josh Dorkin.
Okay.
And so he started the site as a, you know, how do I get my help for myself and my own investing? That was his thing. And so I came on very early in Bigger Pockets development as an actual another investor saying, I've got problems. What do I do? And so I came on actually, I was like, I have no idea. It's a long story behind it, but basically my dad told me I was 21 years old, told me I would never be good. You know, real estate was not a good path to go down because, you know, tenants won't pay rent, you'll lose all your money and you'll go bankrupt. And so I Googled what to do when tenants don't pay rent. And I came across Bigger Pockets in their very early stages and became good friends with Josh Dorkin. And that's how I kind of, now I'm a VP, I guess you'd call me. And, you know, I help run the site now. But yeah, so that's kind of how Bigger Pockets came about and then how I kind of joined it.
Wow, that's awesome. So you joined up on Bigger Pockets. Did you make any investments before you joined Bigger Pockets or you were just learning at that time?
So I had bought my first property and it was just, I didn't know I was going to be an investor. You know, I just bought a single family house and then I decided I wanted to get into rental properties. And that's when I originally signed up then for Bigger Pockets was when I decided I was going to buy rentals, but I hadn't bought a rental yet. So I was working on my first live-in flip. You know, I lived in it, fixed it up and then sold it.
Okay. And then, can you tell us a little bit about that and your experience with it?
Sure. So I love the live and flip idea. I mean, I'm really a big fan of that. I call it house hacking. The idea of, yeah, combining your house with your investment. So I lived in it. I bought it for $80,000. Used a really low down payment loan. It wasn't FHA, but today it's basically the same thing. It was just like a 5% down loan or something like that. Bought it. I borrowed the money to fix it up and I did all the work myself. Put about $20,000 into it. So I bought it, I say about $80,000. Put 20 into it, so about 100,000 into it. Sold it for 130, I think somewhere in the 130 range. So after realtor fees and all that stuff, I cleared about 20 grand.
Great.
And yeah, it was great. It took me 9 months and I was like, man, that was fun. And I mean, looking back, all the work I did, you know, probably wasn't worth the 20 grand, but you know, when you're starting out, you do what you do and it worked out.
No, that's an ideal situation like that. And the best way to learn hands-on.
There you go.
I got to ask you though, were you a bachelor when you were doing this?
I was.
Okay.
Yes, I was.
Most women do not agree with that lifestyle there.
Yeah. Well, funny, that's actually what the $20,000 went towards. So my wife, we got married right at the end of the flip or the project. So it was finished. I moved her in when we got married. And then we sold the house a couple months later. But so yeah, she didn't want to move in until it was finished. obviously, yeah. Like you said, it doesn't always work out.
No, that's a great story there. I love that.
Yeah, so the $20,000 paid for a dream wedding, and I was hooked on real estate.
Very cool. So from there, you get the $20,000, you're feeling good about investing. What was your next strategy after that?
So the next one is another side of like the house hacking concept that I like to talk about, and that is I bought a duplex, and I lived in half of it, rented the other half out, and I mean, I rented the front. There was actually like two separate houses on one lot, technically, so it's still a duplex, but it was two separate houses. I lived in this little one-bedroom in the back. In the back yard, basically. And then the front house was two bedrooms, one bath. And so my wife and I lived in the one bedroom and rented the front one out for $650 a month. My mortgage payment was $620 a month. So
that's great.
Yeah, right. Like I was like, this is amazing. I mean, it wasn't all free. I had to pay, you know, water and garbage and utilities. And but it was a heck of a lot cheaper than me going and paying $650 somewhere else to live.
Right.
Yeah. And get that hands-on training, how to be a landlord right there. Like, it was great. I mean, I was basically living for free and learning how to be an investor at the same time.
Now, here's something I got to get into. You had your tenants living on the same property as you. Was there any hiccups with that situation or did it run pretty smooth for you?
Well, so there's always hiccups there. Yeah. Because I mean, they'll come over, you know, and bug you whenever if they know you.
Right.
You know, some people actually don't tell. And I've told people this, you don't have to tell your tenants that live next door that you're the owner. I mean, you could just be another tenant and have a property manager look after it. So that is a path, but I didn't do that. However, I made the other mistake of renting to friends. And so I rented that front house for $650 to some friends at first, which I thought this is going to be great. You know, I can hang out with my buddies and things will be great. Well, like my buddies were the kind that would eat like mayonnaise out of a jar with a spoon while watching like 30 hours straight of Friends or something. You know, like that's all they did was sit at home and make messes and be weird college kids. And eventually one of them got sent to jail and to prison and the other guy like couldn't pay the rent. And so like, it just ended very badly.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Anytime friends and family, it could be tough. We all know that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I avoid that now, the friends and family thing. And yeah. So again, yeah, living with your tenants can be a little bit tough. I think the key is to treat it like a business. This is not like I'm the next door neighbor who also is a landlord. I'm your buddy. Like it's a business. I'm a property manager. I own this property. These are the rules. These are the guidelines. This is office hours are between this and this time. If you have a problem, get it to me in writing. I mean, all those rules that a property manager does, just because you live next door doesn't mean you can throw them out the window.
And since you said that, do you use property managers now or are you hands-on with that?
I'm still pretty hands-on with it. I have 42 units right now of my own.
Wow. So
we just kept buying after that point. But we still manage all of our own except for two. And so I'm a very big believer in like the Tim Ferriss, 80-20 rule that he popularized. I mean, it's not his rule, but he popularized a lot in the 4-hour work week. So like I apply that to my investing and I said, what 20% of my properties give me 80% of my problems? And in my case, it was like, what 5% of my problems or 10% of my properties give me 90 or 99% of my problems? It was the same two, always, year after year, problem after problem after problem. So I said, okay, I'm going to get rid of those and I'm going to keep the ones that I like. And so two of my properties are with a property manager. The rest of them, my wife takes care of managing most of them, taking phone calls. And we have an office manager who takes a lot of the phone calls and shows units and stuff. But yeah, other than that, we pretty much do it all in-house.
Nah, I'm blown away. 42 units. That's a lot to take on there. What time frame did you build this over?
Let's see. So the first one would have been 08. So 07 was the live and flip. 08 would have been the first one. So the last, 6 years now?
So very impressive. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, like the last one was a 24 unit. Well, not the last one, but one in the middle was a 24 unit. So that added, half that portfolio right there just off of the apartment complex we bought.
All right. So now that you're into, multi-unit apartment buildings, is that a new strategy you're going towards or was it just a deal that you decided to jump on?
At the time, I knew I wanted to get into that. And then when the deal kind of came to me, it was actually kind of a cool story of how it came to me. I read this book by Ken McElroy called The ABCs of Real Estate Investing. A fantastic book, a good introduction to apartment complex repositioning, the idea of buying them cheap, fixing them up and reselling them a few years later. It's like flipping, but for apartments. Mm-hmm. So I read this book, loved it. I read the whole thing on a Saturday. I think I read the sequel, which is called The Advanced Guide to Real Estate Investing on the same day. I was so pumped and excited. Yeah, great books. And I go to church the next morning. There's this old couple there, older couple. And I'd known them for years and had talked to them. And they kind of knew I was doing this real estate thing. And, they're just like this friendly old couple. And so I was just telling them, I was like, oh, man, I read this really good book on apartment complexes. And I really want to buy one someday. That'd be so much fun. And they gave me this funny look. And they say, actually, we have an apartment complex we're looking to sell. And it was just perfect, right? I mean, it was perfect. So this is why I always tell everyone, my advice to everyone is tell everyone you know about what you're passionate about, because you never know who can help you get that, achieve your goals. I mean, I had no idea these people owned real estate, let alone a 24-unit apartment. So they sold it to me at a great price with owner financing. They carried the contract on it. It took a year to put the deal together because it was the most creative deal I've ever done. But in the end, it worked out great. And I love multifamily. I probably do lots more of that in my career.
That's a great story there. What percentage of it was performing? What did you have to do a lot to it?
Yeah, actually quite a bit. So they had actually bought it. So they had owned it for 30 years or something like that. And then they came and sold it to a guy 10 years earlier from when I got it. And they sold it to him. And then the economy started suffering. His other businesses started suffering. And the guy just basically went bankrupt. And so they foreclosed on him, took it back. And at the time they got it back, the thing was half empty. So out of the 24 units, I think actually only 11 were rented and 13 were vacant.
Okay.
And some of them were vacant, needing a good cleaning. But most of them were vacant, needed complete overhaul. Everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so my wife and I actually spent the first 2 years a lot of our free time just in there fixing up units. You know, we did it ourselves. I mean, sometimes we hired people to do stuff, but a lot of it, I just would go in and, you know, we'd go after work or whatever. And I quit my job somewhere in the middle of that the first time I quit. And I worked on it full time for a little while. But yeah, we fixed it up ourselves, got them one at a time rented out. You know, we'd finish one, move to the next one, finish that one, move to the next one, and just keep renting them out until it took 2 years and had them all rented out, all 24.
Man, super cool. I've heard a lot of home runs from you here. Was there a time that you made an investment that you were like, oh my God, what did I just do?
Oh, like every day.
So, good to hear.
Yeah. Oh, I make a lot of, yeah. Here's my biggest mistake. I mean, the biggest thing, I've never actually like lost a massive amount of money on a deal yet, but this was, you could call that this one. So this was a property that I bought. It was a duplex on top of this beautiful hill in this great neighborhood that overlooked the ocean or like the bay, where you could see the bay, you could see the whole town. I mean, really like great location.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this house and it was a duplex up and down. And I looked at it and it was really ugly. I mean, it needed a lot of work. It needed paint inside and out. It probably needed, I would guess, $20,000 worth of work to make it rent ready. And I got it for $40,000. I mean, just cheap. They started at like $100,000. They just kept lowering their price and I lowballed them and they took it. And I'm like, this is going to be great. But you know what would be better than putting $20,000 into a duplex? We should turn this into a single family house and it'll just be a beautiful, big, gigantic mansion of a house. And so we did it. I mean, we spent the next 9 or 10 months of my life every day over there working.
Wow.
And this is before I learned you shouldn't necessarily do all your own work on your flips if you want to make a, you know, a growing business out of it. But mm-hmm. I was, you know, so I bought it. My wife and I both, we hired another guy. We worked on it every day for almost a year. And then we listed it at $170,000. We bought it for 40. We ended up putting 60,000 into it to get it fixed up to this high-end house.
Mm-hmm.
We had 100 into it, put it on the market for 170 with dollar signs in our eyes. We were so excited. And then it sat on the market for 12 months straight.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And we dropped our price from 170 to 165, 160, 150, 140, 130. Finally got it sold for 125.
Oh man.
Yeah. So with carrying costs and all that, in the end, we wasted 2 years, didn't make a penny. I mean, like I was paying hard money loan every month of that 2 years. And so like we paid 20 some thousand just in interest. And in the end,
goodness,
made nothing. Yeah. I mean, I look at it now, I'm like, I would have had a duplex. I would have had 40 plus 20. I would have had, you know, 60 into it, would have rented for $2,000 a month. Like those are stupid good numbers.
Right.
And I did not know what I was doing enough to realize that. And I didn't use the highest and best use of that property would have been a duplex all day long.
I mean, everything sounded good though with the approach though. Definitely good ambition and good exit. Just these things just happen.
Yeah, I had that ARV so wrong that after repair value, I mean, I guess the problem was there was no comps for it. I mean, like we looked around and there we thought 170 was where it would sell, but I live in a smaller area. And so there wasn't like, yeah, we can point to these five houses that were that size and that condition that sold for that much. There was nothing. It was like, well, this one's kind of like that. And it was kind of about that price, but not really. And it was in a totally different town. You know, like that was
right.
So, I mean, yeah, trying to think outside the box in that way was not a good idea. I should have stuck to what was, you know, less risky and not tried to go for that huge $60,000, $70,000 home run and tried to just stick with something more conservative, and I would have been probably better off.
No, what's cool about that, though, I mean, even though it definitely kicked you down for a second, you still made it through. You didn't throw in the towel. You got out from under it, and you moved on to bigger deals and better deals at that point.
Yeah, and I don't think I would have ever like come to the conclusion about how good I like rental properties, especially multifamilies, had it not been for that. I mean, that really helped me see like how much more cash flow I could have gotten off that. And it really taught me the lesson about working on my business versus in my business.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you 100% on that.
Yeah, it was a rough time, and I mean, it still kind of hurts a little bit when I think about it. Man,
I'm sorry, I just brought that back up for you then.
That's all right. It's a good lesson. I like telling people that. I tell it a lot because it's such a like a thing that a lot of people make a lot of those mistakes about, you know, trying to do everything themselves and trying to hit that home run when there's not a lot of comps to back it up. And it's very common people make those mistakes. So hopefully I can help somebody else avoid it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. You're up to 40 plus units. You're switching into some commercial now. What are some personal goals you're working on this year towards real estate investing?
Sure. So my goal One of my goals for the year is to refinance my apartment complex. So I want to do that. Last year was a year of stabilizing. I only bought one property in 2014. And I did that because at the beginning of the year, I promised my wife, I said, we won't buy anything else until everything's stabilized, until it's all refinanced, everything's on long fixed rate mortgages, and everything's paid off the way we want. I mean, like set up for ease, I guess, was the thing. So we spent all year doing that. Now we've done that pretty much. All I have left is the apartment complex, which, you know, that I'm not as worried about that because we have the seller financing on it. So my goal for the year is to do that and then to buy some rental properties, vacation rental properties. So I don't know if I'll get into that niche necessarily, but I like that niche. I like thinking about it. So I thought, hey, what the heck? Why don't I buy a few, see how it goes? And if I like it, I'll do more. And if not, I'll change niches next time. And I'm always looking for more multifamilies. Just multifamilies are like the hottest investment right now in the country. So I don't expect to find a killer deal on one of those, but I'm always looking.
Right on. Well, and I'm glad you mentioned vacation properties, because that's something I want to get into as well. But I am completely nervous about jumping into other markets where I can't see what's going on. So would you share with me a couple strategies that you're thinking about in the vacation market?
Sure. And I'm just learning these too myself, right? Like so the first thing I've been doing is reaching out to people in the markets that I want to buy in. So I'm considering Houston, which seems weird as a vacation rental place, but I have my sister actually just moved there. And so I thought, well, first of all, I want to buy in a place that I have boots on the ground. I want somebody that I trust that in an emergency could go and help me out to do something. Or at least, you know, hey, here's a friend of mine who's a contractor. Here, I know this guy. I just want somebody that's there. Mm-hmm. Now, it didn't have to be a sister. So I have another friend now I know who actually owns vacation rentals, a few of them in Hawaii. So I'm talking with her. We've been having emails the last few days. I met her on Bigger Pockets. And I've been talking with her about that. So I'm looking now to buy in the same communities that she does, because I know that she knows the best agents, the best repair guys, the best property managers. So I think that's kind of like one of the keys is find people who are doing what you want to do and then latch onto them and learn from them. I think it's in any business, no matter what it is, that's so important and so very few people do it.
How are you going to leverage your purchases in these markets? Are you doing traditional financing? Are you going after hard money for these?
Good question. So I think my strategy will be probably similar to what I've been doing lately on these multifamilies. I bought a few recently where I do this. I'll buy the property, something that needs work, and I buy it with private money or hard money if I had to or whatever. You know, it's a fuzzy line between, but I'll buy it with basically private money and then hopefully use that private money as well to fix the place up. Now, maybe I'll use my own money to fix it up, but I don't like using my own money. So I'll probably use the private money to both buy it and fix it up. Then I'll go to a bank and say, look, you know, for example, I bought this condo on the beach in Hawaii, we'll say, for $225,000. I put $50,000 into it. I'm at $275,000. This thing's worth $500,000. Will you give me a mortgage for $400,000? Right? So like that's in a bank, hopefully, if I can get those numbers right, and I don't know if I can. Again, I'm just, you know, looking into this. But if I can get those numbers to work out right, I can get a bank to refinance that. I've been doing that. I've done that 4 or 5 times in the past year on different, or last year and a half on these properties. That's why I've been saying stabilizing, because I bought a bunch of properties with private money. And now I went through the process of refinancing them all so I could do that with limited money out of pocket. I really like that strategy a lot.
No, that's a great strategy there. And then like in our marketplace, I'm in Cleveland. And everything we do is private investors, hard money investors, because the property value here is so low, banks typically won't even loan on these smaller properties. So in your marketplace, what's your average house? You threw out a couple numbers there around, you know, 100 grand finished product. Is that pretty normal?
Yeah, mine's pretty, I mean, we're 2 hours south of Seattle. And so, you know, Seattle's one of the hottest markets in the country in terms of, you know, how high their prices are. And we're an hour and a half, 2 hours from there. And ours, yeah, somewhere on the low end, you can buy a house for 50 grand, on the high end, 150.
Okay.
But yeah, we're typically right in between that range. My typical rental house is going to be in the $60,000 range, probably duplex around 100, for like a finished, nicer, but older property.
And the banks don't have any problem with those numbers then?
I use a lot of portfolio lenders that are local.
Okay.
And so, I mean, specifically, there's like one or two that I've used. I mean, one primarily, and then another one I've used once, that are local portfolio lenders. So they don't sell up to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. They don't have the same stringent rules that most conventional lenders do. They keep their loans in-house. And as such, they're willing to do those smaller loans. They're community banks. They're not the big national guys. And so they're comfortable with, they're like, oh yeah, we get it. We get that your houses are worth this much money because, you know, like my banker is a real estate investor in my same community. Like we compete on properties. And so like, I'm like, he totally gets me. And he's the guy, you know, he's the underwriter and the banker because it's a bank of 12 people. You know, so like, I like those small community banks for that reason.
No, that's great having those relationships.
Yeah, yeah, it definitely is.
Now, I got to ask, being the VP of Bigger Pockets there, do you have people blowing you up constantly, just pitching you all types of oddball investments?
I do find myself on a number of mailing lists that I never subscribe to. Like, all of a sudden, I start getting these, like, turnkey property, like, emails, and I'm like, I didn't subscribe to a turnkey property newsletter. So I get a lot of that, and I get a lot of people that want to, like, partner and work with me, and I get a lot of offers of private money, honestly. Like, people are always like, hey, if you need cash, because, you know, private lenders want to get their money working, and it's hard to find good deals. But I tell people kind of the same thing every time is, like, I would love to use your money. I mean, that's like a dream, right? To have people throwing money at you.
Yes.
But I don't have any good projects that are worth, you know, taking private money. Because in order to take private money, you generally have to have a really good deal. Otherwise, you know, the higher interest might not make it worth it for you. And I'm just not finding the incredible deals that I want. And I don't have that pipe that's churning out a lot of them right now. And so, yeah, I turn most people. I just say, hey, I'll put you on a list. If something comes up, I'll give you a call. Maybe we can work something out.
That's a great feeling there. I got to ask this then, because I've recently just hit that in like the past 12 months where investors just approach me nonstop offering private and hard money. How deep were you into the business when people just started, hey, Brandon, I got money, do something with it?
So, I mean, it definitely takes some time, right? Like a lot of the using partners and private money and all that stuff, it takes a little bit of time. I would say I probably had 4 or 5 properties under my belt before people started offering me to partner and to work together. I mean, it started very slow. Like my first partnership was with my parents. And, you know, then it was another couple that I knew, like just some casual couple that I knew from church or somewhere like that. Yeah, it was from church, another church couple. And so like, you know, that's how I kind of like started using other people's money, was just with small relationships. And then, you know, people tell their friends and whatever else and, you know, hey, this guy, he knows what he's doing. It's another reason why I tell people to do what you're doing. You know, be on a podcast, do a podcast, make a blog, write an article, like be active in your community and in online spaces, places like Bigger Pockets, because there's a lot of people out there that would love to get involved with real estate, but don't have, you know, I don't know, they don't have the knowledge or the time to do it, but they got the cash. So if you can make yourself available and known that you're doing stuff and you're out there fighting the man, I mean, people are going to find you.
No, I agree 100% with that. Me being on Bigger Pockets, I have people reach out to me constantly because there are a lot of people jump in the Cleveland market. But like you said, they don't have feet on the ground and then they get caught up in a bad situation. And next thing you know, they're scrambling. They know I'm in the market through Bigger Pockets. Yep. So I have a lot of investors reach out to me. Hey, can you check this out for me and just let me know what's going on over here?
Yep, exactly. And I think, you know, we've often thought about like, we should make some kind of like formal, like job board for that kind of thing, like boots on the ground board, but never done it. But.
You should, you really should. Cause I think that's a huge problem across the country is, you know, there's so many people that want to just take somebody for a quick 10 rather than have a long-term relationship and make hundreds of thousands of dollars together. So yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. Well, yeah, we're working on it slowly.
Can you share with us what your top free real estate marketing tip would be?
Top free marketing tip. I'm gonna go with, let's see. I got a couple. So one of them that I like a lot, the idea of, and I haven't done this at all. So that's why I'm not gonna say this is my top, but I'm gonna say this because I know people have done this and it's awesome. I just only recently learned about it. The idea of going to your county administrative office or courthouse, getting the eviction records, and then contacting all the landlords that are evicting tenants and keep a list of the people that are doing evictions. That it's powerful for a couple of reasons. One, it's free because eviction records are public record. Two, I've been through evictions. I know that they are terrible, like stressful and irritating, and you're angry and you're mad and you just can't understand why this tenant's such a jerk and they're causing you all these problems. So if you can go to them and give them a call and be like, hey, you know, investor John, I'm new to investing. I'm looking to buy property in this area. And I was just wondering if you have anything you're interested in selling. I saw you were going through an eviction, so I thought you'd be a guy to talk to. I mean, like maybe they'll want to sell that property directly. Maybe they'll have another one. Maybe they want to get out of the business completely and they'll sell you their entire portfolio. You never know. I love that strategy, but again, I haven't done that one, so I can't completely say it works, but I know people who use it. But my favorite, honestly, is like the driving for dollars thing. I mean, there are so many houses available that are just like I don't know, on the side of the road that nobody deals with. They're not for sale. Nobody's putting up an ad on Craigslist, something like that. They're just sitting there on the road, and you drive by them, write down the address, go home, look up the owner, give them a call or send them a letter. And there's a very good chance that you can buy that property because the person's probably motivated. I mean, it might take you 100 tries to get one, but how long does it take to make 100 phone calls or drive by 100 properties?
Right.
I mean, if you want it bad enough, I mean, that's a really inexpensive way. Throw your kids in the back, put on a Barney video or something, and, and just drive for a couple hours a night.
Awesome. Now, when you're doing direct mailing to these people, are you using other services too? Are you doing like the click-to-mail for your paid marketing or...
So I don't do a lot of direct mail. I mean, the only direct mail I've ever done has been like handwritten letter, like send out. I know a lot of people do a lot of direct mail. I just kind of like, I don't know. I want to get into it, but I don't want those leads necessarily because I don't want single family houses anymore. And so once I figured out how direct mail works, like a couple of years ago, I like got into direct mail and I love the concept of it. I started thinking, well, I don't want single family houses anymore. So maybe I can direct mail for apartment owners, which doesn't work quite the same way because they're not as motivated. The letters are a little more professional. That said, you still get the list from the same place. I'd still go to like List Source to get the list. You can find the property owners of multifamily properties. And then just, I send, you know, when I send a letter, I like to send letters with like a picture of me and my wife on it. So like, I have like a letter with like the bottom, there's a picture of me and my wife. And it's just like a nice, hey, we're looking to buy, you know, this property. I like this neighborhood, blah, 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 blah. And you know, I tend to think that that works really well. I actually submit that letter with every offer that I submit to anybody, whether it's a bank repo or somebody down the street selling their house. Any offer, I submit a letter with a picture of my wife and I because I think it just works so well. So anyway, I'm not the world's best direct marketer just because I got into it too late apparently, but...
No, that's a great strategy there because usually everybody's on the hardcore, you know, let's negotiate and hammer this out and you're giving a warm welcome here. Let me buy your property.
Yeah, I like the... Because in my theory is... I mean, my theory is this, that people, no matter what they are, a bank or whatever, everybody has a person that makes a decision, and that person is a person, right? Like, they want to sell, they don't want to sell to some faceless investor who's trying to rip them off or get an amazing deal. I mean, mine's like, hey, I'm a young guy, me and my cute wife over here looking to make our way in the world. You know, like, people love that story, and they love... Yeah, I mean, play that up. If you're young and investing or you're trying to get investing, don't think of that as a disadvantage. That is your greatest advantage, is being anything under the age of like 50. Like, that's such a powerful asset to have because, I mean, people like to help younger people achieve things. And so I use that all day long.
It's a great strategy. And that is the first time I've ever heard that too. So I will start implementing that. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
And then for all the newbies out there, what is a what was the tip you could give them so they can get started investing in real estate right now?
Sure. So I'll leave it a couple things. First of all, there is something that inside of a person they have to turn a switch on, and here's what I mean by that. So, I mean, I said this earlier, right? I want to buy more larger multifamilies. I want to buy, you know, a 50 unit, 100 unit, 200 unit properties. However, I know for a fact that I have not switched that in my head yet. I've not turned on that switch. So notice, even when I talk about it, I say, I want to. I look at it. I have not yet said, I'm doing this. Like, I am investing in this. I'm going to right now. So I think the very, very, very first step is to turn that switch on. You've got to turn that switch on. And I don't know the best way to do it. I think podcasts are perhaps the best way to, you know, convince yourself to turn that switch on, just because listening to people who are doing it helps you flip that switch. So that's the first thing, is flip that switch in your head that, yes, I'm going to do this, not I want to do this. Secondly, get educated as much as possible. And you don't need to pay, you know, like hundreds of thousands of dollars for some education. Just go to the library and get some books and just read and read and read, or watch YouTube videos or listen to podcasts or whatever. Just fill yourself with as much general information as you can. And as you start to get interested in certain topics, focus in on those. That way you don't need to know everything about everything. You need to know a lot about one thing. And so as you learn what your interests are, get more and more focused. And the more you learn, the easier it's going to become just to pull a trigger and jump in to buy something.
Hey, Brandon, you dropped a wealth of knowledge on us today. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, I'm happy to.
Where can the listeners connect with you at?
I'm going to say just on biggerpockets.com is probably the best way. I'm there every single day, all day long, pretty much. I mean, I'm always around. It's on my phone continually. So,
awesome, Brandon. Well, I really appreciate this. Thanks for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening in today. For more tips on real estate investing and creating streams of passive income, stop by michaelalder.com or connect with me on Twitter at michaelalder34, or you can find me on Facebook. All right, everybody, thanks, and let's take action today.